Hello and welcome to another episode of The Vinyl Countdown, the podcast where I, Jeremy Levine, break down my favorite vinyl releases from cover to cover and everything in between. On this week's special episode, it's my 100th episode. Yay! Very excited about that. It's been kind of a long, winding road to get here. I should have been at 100, like, a while ago, but then things happened, as you all know, the hurricanes in 2020, just taking breaks here and there, work. I mean, a lot of things kind of happened that pushed this off to later than it should have been, but I'm here now and here with a very special guest, an interview with Rody Walker from Protest the Hero. He was nice enough to come on the show, and I really appreciate that, you know, to come on this little, you know, nothing of a show to come and talk to me for a while about the 2008 record Fortress. Now, breaking format just a hair, which normally it's records that I have in my collection, as you all know, but I don't have this one yet, but I did just order it, so it's close enough. And speaking of that record, I'm going to get into Variant Corner, and then we'll get on into the interview. So, let's get on down to Variant Corner. So, Discogs says there are 14 releases of this record. Did not realize there were so many. That's not including the newest one coming out, so it should be 15 when that one hits. There's just a standard black in 2008. And let's see. So, 2008 saw, oh boy, there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 releases on vinyl. And I missed all of them because I was not really into vinyl yet back then. So, there's a limited edition Purple Swirl. That one was limited to 250, and it looks really fucking cool. Last sold in 2019 for $55, which I imagine now, if any of them are up for sale, it's not going to be for $55. Again, the standard black, it sold actually last year in May for $50, but there's one for sale now for $130, so there's that. Purple Clear also popped up around this time, which honestly sort of kind of looks like the Purple Swirl. So maybe not a different pressing. Let's see what it says as far as the... It doesn't give you a pressing count here, but this record last sold for $60 back in 2018. So I think those are the same though. And then there's a Purple Marble, which, god damn it, I would not be surprised. That's also the same. That is pretty much the same fucking record. So I'm almost positive that they have the same listing three times. I should have researched this before I did it. But this one sold for $95 just last November. So kind of gives you an idea of what it'll be now, right? And there are two for sale, one for $90 and one for $90. So, you know, not great. Then there's a Coke Bottle Clear, or Coke Bottle Blue, they call it. I love my Coke Bottle colored records. That one is limited to 250 as well. It says here, only two variants were pressed for Fortress by Underground Operations as confirmed on their website. Misprint resulted in the pressing of Coke Bottle Blue variants without the green marble mixed in. So this is like a misprint variant. 250 available. So that makes me think that, yes, this Purple Swirl, Purple Clear, and Purple Marble are actually all the same exact fucking record, because they are from the same place, Underground Operations, which... Again, they said only had two, so scratch that then. So there's 11 pressings and 12 when the newest one hits. Then there's just a standard, regular old clear. Sold for $45 last year. No pressing count on that one as well. And then you get into the one out. Okay, so this is the green blue clear, which is just the, I think, the correct Coke bottle clear with the, like, the blue smoke or whatever. This one sold for $86 in 2020, but is now for sale for about $205. So, limited to 250 as well. So this seems like, this was the correct version, right? Like, this is what it was supposed to be, I guess. So there's the misprint, and then this is like the real or the regular one or whatever it is, right? Then you get a Vagrant record pressing from 2008 as well. Sold for $35 in October of 2020. Goddamn. This one, again, no pressing count. It's a kind of bright, very bright yellow pressing. Looks really cool. And Well, okay. So underground operations, vagrants, Cobra Side distribution. There is this. It says dark blue marble, and that's what it looks like. Sure, selling for $210, but it just sold not even a year ago for 45. So the person trying to sell it for 200 can go fuck themselves. Then 2015 saw a repress. So after 7 years, we got another pressing on green marble. It just says not on label. I almost wonder if that's a bootleg or something. I don't know. No, it's not actually. It's a limited release of 300 copies on green marble with reinterpreted artwork, no track listing on labels or jackets. One just sold for $175 this past December. And there's one for sale now also for $175. So, goddamn, going for quite a bit. So then you fast forward another 3 years, you get another purple opaque. This is the box set though. This is the one that I really wanted and I fucking missed out on it. It has like a there's a light, a pink and a purple LP. So there's that. $130 what it sold for back in October of last year, and now it's up to 200. Exclusive pressing limited to 1,000 copies. So LP1 is Fortress remastered for vinyl, and LP2 is Fortress instrumental version. That's the pink one, which is really fucking cool. It also comes with a flag, a custom enamel pin, just some other really cool things, right? So, and a commemorative tour laminate from the Fortress 10-year tour, which I also missed out on because I suck. However, really cool release. I really wanted that one when I found out it was a thing, and I totally missed out on it. So there's that. But then there's also the Fortress X, they call it, which is again had a black inside of clear blue. It's like a black with or blue with like a black blob, right? Signed by the band. It also is a big box set, 1,000 pressed. Was originally only available by purchasing a gold VIP package for the anniversary tour. All VIP package copies are signed by the band. Leftover unsigned copies were sold online after the tour. These are going for 120. Last year it sold in November, and now there's three for sale, 170, 180, and 200. So about par for the course, I guess. And then finally, the last one listed is another limited edition. It's a purple, pink, orange kind of tricolor record. Looks really cool. It was limited to 500 copies and not a box set or anything like that. It sold just last week for $113, and there's one for sale for $160 right now. So as again, they start to get pricier and pricier with the later pressings, right? And then the most recent, which mine actually just shipped, which is fucking awesome considering, as you all know, the vinyl world has been just fucking rocked with delays and just, you know, pressing. It's been out of control, and I'm like shocked that I ordered this just like a couple of weeks ago, and it's already shipped out. So they had them in hand, which is really nice. Like I'm just not even used to that. Because for reference, I actually ordered a Thursday record last May, and it just shipped this morning. So yeah, I mean, I have so many records backed up that are just like on my pre-order list from last, like, you know, March or last May, July, August, September, and there's no word on them. So it's really nice to kind of be able to get this one in hand, like order it, and then 2 weeks later kind of get it. So that's pretty awesome. But this one's actually limited to 750 copies, and I think it was the first time that this record has been pressed on a double LP, so should have better sound quality, right? And I believe it's a 45, I believe 45 RPM, if I'm not mistaken. But whatever the case, it's gonna be great on a Hellbent on Heaven burst vinyl, which I posted it on my Instagram before. It looks so fucking cool. I also picked up Kazaya as well on the Burn Away burst vinyl, which still looks cool, but man, this Fortress one is just, they knocked that out of the fucking park, dude. So yeah, so there's that. So I'm really excited to get that in hand. Again, you know, it's records that I've been listening to for years and years and years, and I just fucking love them. And again, tying it back to the interview, I was really excited to get him on the show because, you know, I just wanted to pick his brain about the record and just a lot of other things that come up. So hope you all enjoy, and I will be back at the end to kind of close everything out. So thank you.
All right, so this is Jeremy Levine from the Vinyl Countdown podcast. I almost forgot the name of my own show. Talking with Rody Walker from Protest the Hero today. How's it going today, man?
Oh, it's going just beautifully. Thank you for having me, Jeremy.
I appreciate you coming on. So real quick, just because we can kind of hop right into it. So with Protest the Hero, how did the band kind of come about? Like, when did you guys sort of get together and go like, hey, we got something here. Let's keep this going.
I don't know when it became quite so serious, but I know it was probably 1999 when we were first starting to play as a unit. Wow. And then we just sort of, like, we were just kids and writing absolute garbage. But, you know, we got together like every other band did in elementary school and then high school. And I think what set us apart was that we were writing original songs and nobody else was really doing that. And from then on, it was kind of like, I don't know, just felt like we had a bit of a head up on the rest of the fellas. Just my dog just almost fell in the pool. Sorry. But I don't know. Like, it was just like we were always a lot more serious than the other high school bands and stuff like that. And then afterwards, it sort of became our career.
So with, I noticed one of the big differences, like Kazaiah came out and it was like a concept album, right? Telling a pretty cohesive story from start to finish. And with Fortress, did you guys want to move away from that? Was it something that you specifically were like, hey, we don't want to necessarily do that again. We want to try to, you know, make it its own thing, or it kind of just happened organically, I guess.
It happened fairly organically. You'd have to ask Arif that. He composed lyrics for both those albums. I know he felt a little constricted by the concept of Kazaiah. So he wanted to sort of move past that and write something that was still conceptual in nature, but not necessarily sewn to a narrative. So I think Fortress is conceptual in nature, but it's not necessarily a story, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. You I did read, I can't remember if it was an interview with you for either Kazaiah or for this record, one of the two, but I remember reading a line that's kind of stuck with me, something you said about there's just something really fun about screaming really violent shit over loud music or something to that effect. And, you know, this record kind of has no shortage of that, just sort of the imagery and a lot of the, I guess, bloodshed, for lack of a better word. Like, is that something that you guys, I guess, kind of sit around and go, man, that sounds fucking cool. Yeah, I want to sing that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, like, I think Arif penned that specifically at that time, that it was like we were listening to weird fantasy kind of metal stuff and just sort of wanted to bring it into a more like modern realm, which is funny when you're talking about like Genghis Khan or Phlebias, like ancient myths and stuff like that. But like, bring it out of that like really silly place that it lives for whatever reason, and put it in more of like a historical context, so it's not quite so silly. But yeah, it is definitely about being like, there are some brutal historical events that you could sing about in this context and make it sound badass, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, history, there's a lot of violent things throughout history. And like I said, you can kind of pull and make them sound really cool in a modern context. And also, you know, people maybe not realizing like, oh, you say Genghis Khan and it's like, oh yeah, I've heard of that name. But then you really think about it, it's like, that's a little strange to throw into a metal song, but I mean, it works.
Yeah. I mean, it's super interesting, right? Like, I don't know if it's true, but they say Genghis Khan, it, like, his bloodline is related to like 5% of the population of Earth in a modern setting. Like, this is a guy who went out and fucking conquered.
Yeah, no weird shit. Yeah, that's one of those fun ones that like I've heard that before too. I've never actually looked into it. I'm just like, I'm sure it's probably true. It's fine.
Yeah, it seems right. I don't know.
So I guess diving right into it, right? So Blood Meat kind of comes right out of the gate swinging pretty hard. And I know for myself, when I was trying to kind of get people, I'm sort of the friend who's like, hey, you gotta listen to this band. Hey, have you heard of this or that or whatever? Blood Meat was kind of the song that I used, like, hey, you guys know Protest the Hero? Look, they have this other record too, but if you start here, it's kind of all makes sense, I think, in this sort of, it's like a good representation of kind of everything the band does extremely well, in my opinion at least. But I guess
is like kind of accessible in a way, like as accessible as we could possibly be. Like, it's structured quite stringently compared to the rest of our stuff. Like, there is a defined verse and a defined chorus and they both repeat, right? So it's like, as far as our stuff goes, that I think can be quite difficult to listen to at times. Blood Meat is, I think, the most accessible piece of our catalog.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. It's funny too, because sometimes people listen to things and they kind of don't pick up every single lyric. So they're kind of just like, oh yeah, it sounds cool. But then when you really look into it, you know, it's like, you know, virgin's daughter spread and throats being slit and all these other things. And it's like, huh.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of violent imagery.
As so it is accessible on, I guess, a sonic level. But then as far as lyrically, I think it's just funny to see people's kind of faces when I show them that and they're like, oh, that's kind of, it's like, yeah, it's just part of, you know, it's part of the whole thing. Like, it's just kind of a big showmanship type thing, which there are, I mean, a lot of bands do it too, you know, but it seems like sometimes it's kind of, it's always, some people look at it, look really strangely or like, oh, why would they sing about that? And it's like, it's the story, man, like, chill out, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do love the very end to like the big kind of breakdown or whatever, it really kind of draws out the whole, we'll crush you like vermin and all that. Like, I'm trying to think, like, what was that like? Is that like the first time, or one of the first times you guys did that live, like in front of an audience? Like, was that like a big, like, oh shit moment? Like, the crowd's kind of, you know, super into that, or?
It was kind of anticlimactic. I think the first time we played it, and I could be incorrect about this, but it was like live on TV in Canada on MTV Canada, which was a really cool thing at the time. Like, they had like Mars Volta play, they had Thrice play. Like, it was like a cool weird little thing that they had like actual good bands play, but it was like really anticlimactic because it goes into that, there's like a little pause that's usually got a bass slide in it.
Yeah,
and people thought the song was over, so they just started like cheering, and then it comes into that bah, bah, or whatever the heck it is, and yeah, they kind of took the wind out of the part sales. Like, they took all the power away from it because they weren't quiet during the fucking pause.
That's
yeah.
Well, that kind of sucks.
I mean, it was cool, whatever. Like, it went all over YouTube and caused a whole bunch of YouTube arguments. Like, these people being like, oh, you guys fucking didn't know the song was over. It's like, well, see, he wasn't out, man. Like, nobody knew the song.
Yeah. I guess I didn't think about that. It's true. Like, no one really heard it, I guess, at that point. So it's kind of like, it was all, everybody's sort of taking it in for the first time live. You kind of don't know, but yeah. Okay. That makes sense then. I was thinking, like, I'm expecting to see, like, you know, some huge thing. It's like the crowd just synchronized and really broke out dancing. It's like, no, not really.
Yeah, no, like, that's the weirdest part. Like, in retrospect, you think about it, like, you think about a big epic part. It's like, I wonder what that went over like the first time. I was like, it went over horribly.
Oh, so let's see, moving on to track two, which is kind of funny now. I'm looking at the word, and I've seen this for 13 years now, and I've never actually said the name out loud. So is it the Dissidents? Is that right?
Oh, the Dissensions.
I
forgot the order of the songs. I thought it was Sequoia Throne. I thought you were going to say Sequoia.
No, I got that one now pretty good. But okay, so that makes sense. I'm looking at it, I'm like, God damn, I've literally never said that out loud to anybody. Just read it in my head. Well, there you go. So with this song, again, like, I know you said Arif wrote most of, I guess he penned everything lyrically, right?
Oh, he wrote all the lyrics, yeah.
Okay. I guess with you as a singer, of course, like, would you have any input at all? Were you kind of just like, hey, bring me whatever and I'll just do my best to hammer it out? Like,
it's really funny that you bring that up, particularly in relation to the Dissensions, because we were all listening to Hot Damn at the time. It was somewhere between 2006 or 7 when we were writing this. And, you know, Arif was like such a fan. He is such a fantastic lyricist and poet and whatever. Like, we knew he was going to do the lyrics all the time, but Luke and I were like, yo, you need to write a party song, dude. Like, you need to write us like a getting drunk, going wild party song. And this is the song that he wrote, The Dissensions. And it's like, it's about smoking weed, right? It's like, and he put it in all this like poetic, beautiful language, you know, sending up smoke signals and stuff like that. It's like, this song is not that party. There's nothing about it that parties. He's such a gifted writer. He I don't know, he probably could, but at that point at least he was incapable of writing something that was just like sort of like grab your crotch, rock and roll, you know?
Yeah, that's not what I was expecting to hear the song was about at all.
Yeah, yeah. have a peek through. It's there.
I'm definitely gonna read through that now because I'm like, I'm thinking of the, you know, towards the end with the whole like the monster in her bed and Hector to blood meat. It's like not very party like, but you know, it's whatever you like
I think he was talking about like the typical conservative perception of marijuana, particularly in the United States, that it's like demonized in a sense, which is like kind of hilarious. But that is just my interpretation.
That's speaking of, it's just off topic real quick. It's kind of funny. We just now this year, I think, are allowing like medical marijuana in Louisiana. Still not recreational use, but at least we're getting somewhere with it. But it's like, good God almighty, it's crazy.
It'll come, you know, like Ronald Reagan's been dead for long enough. People are going to forget about his bullshit eventually.
We got, you know, we had the Trump years and all that. And that's like, we're only getting worse and worse candidates coming out of that. So it's just it's a fucking shit show down here, as you can imagine.
No, I mean, we get all the news, but I don't know if you get the news, but all the conservatives are going wackadoo up here right now. Like they're going to convoy in the Capitol and they're occupying our Capitol.
I've been seeing little bits and pieces here and there, but I actually listened to a podcast this morning about it, and it's like kind of detailing it. It's like, good fucking shit. That's just like, it's everywhere.
It's super sketchy, and it's like they just, the site that where they're getting all their money from just got hacked, and they looked, and like 60% of it's coming from fucking United States, and a lot of it's coming from international, and it's just like, what is happening here? And they're like, they were like literally like the first day of it, they were waving Trump flags, Confederate flags, and swastika flags.
Yeah.
And now like they've cleaned it all up. All that stuff is away, but like it's just like hidden under a very thin veneer. You know what I mean? Like everybody knows they're fucking white nationalists.
Yeah. That's just, it's crazy because some people hear about it, like, at work. I'll hear people kind of talking like, oh, you know, in Canada, they're doing this thing with these protests and they're really trying to take back whatever. It's like, do you know what they're doing up there? Like, do you have any idea? Like, I don't think you really fully understand what's going on.
They're attempting to overthrow the government, which is hilarious. Like, they put out this MOU that was like, they don't believe in the way democracy is being conducted. So they want to dethrone a democratically elected leader and install themselves without an election. It's like, you understand how democracy works, right? Because you are not displaying that. Whatever. Fuck them all.
Right. It sucks.
Yeah.
But back on track a little bit here. It's going to get some more fun, yelly, violent shit going. So Bone Marrow's up next. Actually, Sephora Throne is track 4, right? So we'll get to that one. That's another one that's kind of a big, like, that's what I like to show people. I did, you know, it's like Blood Meets Poison. It's kind of my two where I'm like, if you don't like these, you might not like anything else. Because these are kind of, again, more accessible, quote unquote, I guess. But but Bone Marrow, another one. I love it. I want to say, I saw you guys live in like 2008, I believe, at Warped Tour in Houston. And it was like really impressive. A lot of these songs, your range is like up and down and all in between. And to be able to really belt these songs out in 105 degree Texas heat in the middle of summer was very impressive.
Well, thank you very much.
That's one thing I wanted to kind of ask you about some of these songs with how, like, are you thinking about that like for live performances? Like you say, like when you record, you think, God damn, I'm gonna have to hit that note like 50 fucking times this year. Like, does that ever kind of cross your mind? You're just like, nah, fuck it, I'm just belting it out, you know?
I mean, I just write the songs. I write them the way I write them, and it's all like compartmentalized and like it's in pieces, right? And then I get into the studio and I do it, and that's usually the moment when the producer, who was formerly Cam, who also played in our band, he'd usually look at me and go, you're fucked on this one, bud. And then, you know, I'd always get there, but on this record, Fortress specifically, Bone Marrow is very challenging. It's all over the place. There's a bunch of different voices. There's like high soaring notes, there's low growls, and they come at you very quickly.
Yeah.
Limb from Limb is like that as well. But I've only gotten worse about it as I got older. Like, the new record is the hardest shit, this thing that we've written.
Yeah.
Sucks.
So speaking of Sephora Throne, moving in, this is one that, again, accessible, but also it's the only one I can kind of read the lyrics and, to me at least, get a pretty good idea of what's going on as far as just basically humans sucking and us fucking up the earth, more or less.
Yeah, to varying degrees. You know, I think the idea is that people are still worried about this like Hollywood fictionalized version of aliens that are going to come and attack the Earth when it's like we're destroying the Earth anyways. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Like if they exist, like, yeah, they could come and destroy us, but like, why bother wasting the energy thinking about that when you're just, we're actively destroying it?
Yeah. It's kind of, it's fun, like the idea where you're like, you saying, you know, they're not the ones that mutilate our animals and all that. It's like we are and everything else. And it's like, damn, you got a point there. Like,
yeah. And it starts with a Star Trek quote, right? The, did you come here to kill or did you come here to die? Is delivered by Spock to Kirk when he's pit against him in a fight to the death.
So I did not know that. I'm not a huge Star Trek fan. So I never picked up on that. I do know later.
That there's some... Star Trek.
I did hear or pick up on the Starship Troopers quote later on in the record. Do you want to see the galaxy? Like cool shit. That
yeah, we use that because like the line that comes after or the line that comes directly before that is so funny. It goes, two tickets, Zegama Beach, huh? Yeah. It's just like, it is so stupid. Like we had a friend that put out all our tapes and his record label is called Zegama Beach Record.
Wow.
Like, we were obsessed with that part of Starship Troopers, just like the dumbest line that's ever been penned and the dumbest delivery of it that's ever been delivered.
I think I have a buddy of mine who's we're pretty much the same wavelength on movies, music, that kind of stuff, and for whatever reason though, he cannot stand Starship Troopers, and I've been trying for like decade, and like, dude, you gotta watch it and just understand what they're trying to say. It's kind of, it's satire, it's this and that, it's like good kind of schlocky fun, like it's a good movie. He's like, I just don't,
but it's also
like it.
It's just pure cheese, right? Like it's supposed to be campy as fuck while also being kind of awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, for whatever reason he's just like, nope, he will not do it, just does not. He said, I watched it once, like whatever time, he's like 15, he's like, no, that movie fucking sucks. I'm like, all right, suit yourself, man. But and there's also the subset of people that don't really understand the satire and just think it's like, you know, they're really rooting for the military in that movie, not realizing it's kind of an allegory for us. And it's like, all right, missed the point completely, but that's cool.
Yeah, I love that movie, man. I haven't seen it in a long time, but they used to play it on TV every week. And I'd be sitting there going, yeah, I'll watch that again for sure. What's that next? The Fifth Element? Yeah, okay.
It's a good weekend movie. You kind of see it come on, and you're like, fuck, that's what I'm doing for the next 2 hours now.
Yeah.
Moving right along, Palms Red, which is, I love this song just because it's kind of a, I don't know, it's still very heavy and everything, but it kind of has a really beautiful ending. Like, I love that, like, for a million years, and like everything's kind of soaring. And like, one of the songs I guess I kind of compare it to on Kazaya is Turn Soonest to the Sea, which has that kind of big sort of soaring epic outro, which I fucking love, by the way. But this song, is that, I guess I'm trying to figure out here, like, is that something that you guys are like, man, we got to get kind of a, not necessarily a ballad, but one that's like, let's get this kind of big epic song right here in the middle to kind of like break up all the real heavy, fast, like hard shit that's been coming before it.
Honestly, we were trying to write with that. We were trying to write something that had more of like an Irish feel to it to accompany the lyrics, like that. Mm-hmm. The initial riff that comes in with the, right? It's like, it's supposed to kind of dance a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the lyrics that come out with the outro, the for a million years, rage of glass and it cheers, right? It's like supposed to kind of sound like it was attempted to sort of sound like a Irish sort of drinking song. So that was the intent with that, to have it sort of express that to varying degrees. And there's a few other moments where Irish mythology is referenced within the record itself, which in Limb from Limb, there's something about, there's the mention of Flidais, the goddess of the forest and shit like that. It's all Irish mythology. So
yeah,
I'm not sure why we chose that, because I think the only one who even has a hint of Irish in them is Tim, like the rest of us all. But whatever, it's fun.
It kind of makes that last like little 2 minutes into the lads room for a surprise line make a little more sense, I guess, you know, with the use of lads, I guess. But then
that's from something very specific. that's from a hostage negotiation tape that we found.
Oh wow.
From a bank robbery in Toronto. And in 2 minutes, like he had some young woman in a room in a bank. He had a gun to her head, and 2 minutes later, the police walked in and fucking blew his brains out.
Jesus.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. We were, I mean, it's not cool, but interesting. We were a little worried about putting that information out there. That's why it's not really out there, because we were worried that his family would sue the shit. But I don't know. It's been a long time now. It's like 14 or 15 years. I'd like to say that we're safe.
I would think so. That's got a lot of surprises here, Dan. I'm learning a lot that I could not find elsewhere. So then it goes right into Limb from Limb, which is, that's one of my, I've been saying it's one of my favorite songs on the record each time, because I think every song is kind of my favorite. Like, I can go like, one day I'm in a mood for this, or one day I'm in the mood for whatever, you know. Limb from Limb is just fucking great. The way it kind of kicks off real fast and everything. And one thing I do always remember about the song is when I saw you guys laugh, for whatever reason, that like keyboard solo, whatever it is right in the middle, it wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I remember you like, as it's coming, you're like, yeah, you walk to the stage, you're like, there's supposed to be a keyboard here, we don't have it, so just, it's just us. It's gonna go the whole thing. And like,
we're kind of like Neo-Luddites, man. Like, fucking everybody else had computers on stage and they were sampling the stuff that they couldn't play, and we held off on that shit for so long. It's just like, wouldn't do it. The part would come up, we go, whatever, dude, it's just not there. And that keyboard's played by Vadim from Dragon Force.
Okay.
Yeah, fantastic keyboardist. But yeah, so like, I don't know, like, we grew up on punk rock, you know, like, and we found our way to heavy metal and progressive metal through bands like Propagandhi and Strung Out. Like, as those bands got heavier, our interests got heavier. So it's like, we got there through a weird way where it's like, live music's supposed to be kind of fucking sloppy. It's supposed to be, you know, whatever. And everybody else got there by the opposite way, like coming through like Deftones and stuff like that. And so they were like, live music's gotta be tight, 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 tight. And they were right. They were all right. You know, like, we learned that. We learned that by the message boards and shit lighting up, being like, Protest Zero fucking sucks. But it's like, all right, we'll tighten it up. We'll figure it out. And we eventually switched to like in-ear monitors and running samples and stuff like that. But I had more fun when it was just like going fucking nanners and being kind of loose, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's funny you say that, because like with the message boards, like, I remember reading things at the time, like around this album coming out and maybe like the year after, and people saying like, well, you know, when I saw them live, you know, they played songs from Kazai, they seemed like they were really more animated, and everything was, they were kind of all over the place and having fun with it. And these songs, they look really focused and concentrated. And it's like, well, yeah, they're really hard to play, and they're relatively new at this point. So it's like,
yeah,
I could see that where you're not able to really flip around or do anything with guitar when you're having to fucking play a solo that's burning your fingers off, right? And it's like, people didn't seem to understand that, I guess. But
we were also trying to rein it in without compromising what we considered our integrity at that point. It's like, all right, we got to try and play the songs better. So whatever, maybe we'll sacrifice a little bit of the energy for the show and just like actually try and perform the shit. But reality wise, we were all just far too drunk to.
So moving right along, track 7, Spoils. Mm. I don't know why I can't think of how the song sounds now in my head. Like, I've heard it a million times.
You know what? I can't think how it goes either.
I'm kind of looking at the lyrics here. And I'm just like, fuck me. I don't know what the hell's going on with that one. But I know that. That's right.
Yeah, okay. I know that one.
That's a good song. Again, like, it's just kind of short, sweet, gets to the point, right? Which leads very well into Wretch, which is, again, one of my favorites. That one is one I even have, I think it's like an alarm when I wake up in the morning for work, which my wife hates, but you know.
Oh, I imagine, yeah. Just that's a good way to learn to hate any song, right?
There's that real like hard driving, like the bass, like everything going really 100 fucking miles an hour the second it starts. And like, you know, I get up at like 4:30 in the morning for work, and she's like, can you please turn it down? It's like, well, I have to get up, you know. But with Wretch, you know, I think this is actually one of the first times I ever looked into it and was like, oh, that's a thing, I didn't know that. Where you mentioned Choose the Fat with his creator, and like, I guess Chewing the Fat is a thing Royalty used to do, or kind of a whatever. I was like, so I learned that from that song.
Oh yeah.
as a younger man, I was like, huh.
Yeah, I think it's a Scottish in origin. There's a Scottish show called Chewing the Fat, and it's just like a comedy show about two dudes sitting at the bar just fucking talking.
Kind of like the I want to say not Scottish Seinfeld. It's like a show about nothing. It's just kind of dudes just living. But
yeah.
So with this one, like, there's a cat in this song, which I've always wondered, whose cat is that? Or is that just a random sample you found on the internet?
No, that's a real cat. That's Cece. She's long since dead, but that was Juice's cat. I was while I was singing the part, I was just holding the cat in my hand, and in the pauses, it just fucking meowed. Like, it's not like we placed it. It just meowed like that. And I was like, whoa, that was really weird. And we kept it. It's on some releases. It's not on others.
Really?
I don't really know why. I know that Vagrant didn't really like it for some reason. They were like, this is like too stupid. Get this cat out of here. And maybe they're right. But like, at this point, it's like, now there's a bunch of releases that don't have it and a bunch of releases that do. Because in Canada, we were like, we're going to do whatever the fuck we want. And in the States, it was like, all right, well, like, let the record label have a little bit of their way. So, yeah, I don't know. Some versions that cat's there, some versions it's not. But I would prefer it there. We always did it live.
Yeah. That's interesting you say that, because the CD that I have from 2008, it's definitely there. And then... I actually have the vinyl coming in some point next week, and I'm curious now to see if it's going to be there or not. It's a repress. It's, you know, like, I guess the fourth or fifth press, something like that. And I'm curious to see if it's still going to be there or not, or like which one they use to, you know, for that particular release.
What, do you know where the vinyl's coming from? Is it coming from Sheet Happens?
Yes, it is.
It should be there. I imagine, like, Luke is the biggest proponent of that cat meow, and also... run Sheet Happens, so I imagine he would use the master with it, but it remains to be seen, right? I don't really know.
I did not know that. And it's funny, I don't have this record, I don't have it on vinyl yet. And normally, I, like, you know, the whole show is centered around records in my collection, and I was like, well, I'm gonna get this one eventually, so I'd like to really do this. And then I think after I messaged you on Twitter, like, not even 2 days later, a buddy of mine messaged me on Instagram, and said, hey, have you seen this yet? They're repressing all of these Prince of the Hero album. I was like, holy shit. So yeah, I had to go in and just like get a bunch. So I have none, because they're all like super expensive on the resale market. And
oh yeah.
You know, it just, yeah, you know, I get it, but it kind of sucks. I'm like, god damn, I missed out on like all these other presses. They sold out, and then now they're like $100 or up, or however much it is. And it's like, you know, I was like this close. I was getting really close to just being like, fuck it, I'll just pay it because I really want these records. And then, you know, kind of came in and got them for resale. So I'm like, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is we will always do repressings, because it's just like every time we do them, they sell out, right? So it's like,
yeah,
I think roughly once a year would be the plan for repressing of all four or five. How many fucking LPs we have? Like five.
Oh.
something like that.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear, because there are some bands that not necessarily, not that they don't want to do them, but they have like record label shit where it's like, it would cost more to buy the rights to their own music from the old label than they would make with the repress. So they kind of get in a weird, where the fans are like, why are you repress these three albums? Why aren't these two? Like, these are the ones we really want. And it's like, they finally put out statements like, look, it would cost like $5 million to do this. We're not going to make that on these sales. So
yeah,
we're kind of
in a very fortunate state, right? Where we bought our masters, we bought the rights to our music, and on top of that, our guitarist runs a company that essentially is a fulfillment center, right?
Yeah.
So we're in a situation that lots of bands aren't. And like, I know what you're talking about. Like, there's tons of bands. Like, I was looking yesterday, like, I'm trying to buy Wonder Years. I want The Greatest Generation, and I want No Better. What the fuck is that record called? Whatever. I'm looking for two of the older records, because I have a newer one called Sister Cities that I don't like that much.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good record. I just, like, I really prefer those older two, but like, they're out of print. Like, you can't get them fucking anywhere. And if you can, they'll be hundreds of dollars, and I'm not paying that.
Yeah.
So it's like, I know exactly what you're saying. It sucks. And I'm not a clue when they're going to fucking print again.
I think specifically the band I was referencing was Thursday, is their third and fourth albums that are on, like, I think on Island Def Jam. They're just being held hostage for an indeterminate amount of money, but it was basically like, yeah, we can't do it. It's like, well, fuck.
That sucks, man, because like they definitely signed a contract that was like they were upstreaming to a major, and you think like, what could go wrong, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I know they came out of victory, and that was probably rough as well, and then going to Island Deaf to him, it's just like, retrospect, you know, is like, it's so hard to look back and be like, if I knew this record label was going to absolutely buckle us, I would have never signed that goddamn contract. But maybe that's not the case for them. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
I think just from what I've seen, that's kind of, you know, it's one of those things where they didn't, I guess Island Def Jam didn't really like super promote the record anyway. They didn't really seem to care all that much, and then like dropped them after their two albums. And it's like, well, why are you holding on to this then? Like, you didn't want it in the first place.
Yeah, so it's honestly, kind of the only record that I could even like name off the top of my head is Understanding a Car Crash. And that's probably, I don't think that's their major label debut.
No, that was on Victory. Yeah.
So it seems to me like I know they continued to have success. But obviously I don't think that Island Def Jam did much in the ways of promoting them.
Nah, kind of a sad post-hardcore story. It's kind of here, unfortunately, a lot with a lot of bands like that, that kind of came from Victory or whatever other smaller label. And then it's like, oh yeah, we're going to sign this label. And then like, it's really fucking crashes and burns. And like I said, for you guys, that's awesome to hear that you got everything kind of squared away in a situation where you can kind of keep control of everything you have, you know, which is, that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's the allure of a major label is too much for any band to just avoid. Like when we were initially signing in the States, circa 2004, we were offered a deal that was like, we were going to sign to this really cool record label. I'm going to try and leave the specificities out because I don't want to throw anyone under the bus. Okay. But we were going to sign to this really cool record label that had a lot of our favorite bands. We met the guys at that record label. They were all fucking awesome. But that deal was tied in with another record label that was like, after this initial release, for the next release, assuming the first one does well enough, we're going to upstream you to major label. Right. And it was like that broke the deal back for us. It was like, we, like, as much as it's really cool to think that like they're gonna fucking try and pump us out, make us the biggest band on earth, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, maybe my entire life's trajectory would be different, it's like, there is a huge chance that when you go up to that next record label, nobody you fucking ever met is still working there, and they don't give a flying fuck about you. And it's like, that happens to bands all the time. They get their shit shelved, and it happens to like catchier, poppier bands than us. Like it's that fucking band, You Could Have the Best of Me. I can't remember what they're called, but like they had a huge hit, and then they fucking upstream to a major, and they just like, the major didn't like their next release, and they just shelved them, and they just fucked their entire career over. And it's like, I don't know, man. The allure of a major record label is too much for a lot of people, you know?
Yeah. Well, getting back on track a little bit here, finishing off the record we got. No, it's all good, man. It's kind of what the show is. Like, I go off the fucking rails all the time, you know? Goddess Bound and Goddess Gagged, which obviously, I mean, it's like they kind of play hand in hand together. I do, I think it's in Goddess Gagged, maybe. Nope, maybe Bound. You know, the idea of the line of take everything the school's taught you and throw it in the dirt and all this kind of stuff. Like, as I think I was like 23. I was still in college at that time, but a part of me was like, fuck yeah, that's what I want to do. Like,
yeah. It's like super, like, needlessly rebellious shit.
Pretty much. Like, that's probably why it took me so long to graduate. But it's like, you know, part of it was like, man, you know, that would be just to get off, just say fuck everything, because like it all turns out to be bullshit sometimes. And you know, when you especially down here, the history, if you can even call it that we learn, it's like, it's so fucking wrong, you know. And it's like, I have two kids, one 10, one 5, and they're going through school now, and like every time, especially my son comes home and he's like, hey dad, we got this and this, and about the Native Americans and the Pilgrims. And I'm like, let's go talk, son.
Yeah, let's go see what they're telling you about that.
It's not surprising, but I'm like, good God. I was like, no, that is not what happened. I was like, look, just let's talk about it. Oh, we're learning about Columbus this week. It's like, let me tell you about that motherfucker real quick.
Yeah. You're a good guy. Fucking like slave trader. Come on.
Yeah, that's it's awesome. But yeah, so that line especially is like, I'm like, you know what? That's, I get it. Like, I want to adhere to that and just live that. I mean, on some level, you really can't, I guess. I do have to kind of make a living.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
In the back of my head, I'm always like, man, fuck this place, you know? But yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, like, that is sort of the intention of it, you know? Like, it is more about, like, questioning everything and viewing all forms of education and media through a critical lens, right? It's not necessarily being like, nothing is fucking true, yeah. But it's like, we need to further analyze everything that we're taught, because, I don't know, look at all the dumbasses in the fucking world right now that are just, like, media illiterate. You know, so often you see these people that are going like, turn off the legacy media, the mainstream media. And it's like, these same people that are telling you to do this are trusting implicitly dubious sources.
Yeah.
Like, that is not media literacy. Media literacy is consuming a wide variety of sources and consuming it all with a critical eye. You know, like,
yep.
Fuck, man. That's the only way you're going to be able to develop an actual opinion. And that is sort of the intention of that song. And I'll be honest with you, there is not one person that's ever been involved in our band that knows which one is Goddess Gagged and which one is Goddess Bound. We've always just called them Goddess 1 and 2. Not a fucking clue which one is Gagged and Bound.
So, with all that being said about the record, which one is your favorite song? Like, if you had to pick one song off the record to sing for the all the time, like, which one would it be?
Yeah, Bone Marrow, big time. Bone Marrow. Yeah. Just the royalty must die.
Yeah.
I don't know, that's the coolest moment in our entire catalog, I think.
Yeah, it is pretty badass, I will say. That one thing I noticed too with this record, there was a lot more of like the real, like, guttural screams and real low, like, that was I really welcomed that. Like, that was pretty awesome. Cause, you know, as I've gotten, especially back then, I was kind of getting into harder and heavier bands, that kind of stuff. And, you know, the first record was like, yeah, it's real heavy and it's real technical and that's really great. But then, like, every so often you hear like a real growl. It's like, ooh, what was that? Like, I like that.
Yeah.
You know, but it was like kind of spaced out far and few between. And this record's like, still, it's not like overdoing it, but it's definitely more instances of that where it's real, just like, oh, fuck yeah, that's what I want. Like,
yeah, I'd been doing that scream for a while, and I'd been doing it live. And then every time we were going to do pre-production, we did pre-production with a good friend of ours, but, like, I would do that scream in pre-production, he'd be like, nah, man. And, like, he'd always be like, that's not it. But, like, you know, looking back on it, like, he's a punk rock guy. He came from punk rock, and it's like, yeah, no shit, that scream sounds bad to you. But and just, like, and the pre-production for Blood Meat is really funny, because it's like, where that scream is in Blood Meat, it isn't there. And, like, I had always planned for it there. And then when we finally got in with Juice, I was like, I gotta try this thing. Maybe it's cool, maybe it's not, whatever. And I didn't. He was like, that's exactly what you need to be doing. And I was like, and then we just, like, peppered it throughout the entire record. So it was all kind of just about, like, gaining confidence and not listening to. I'm not gonna say he was wrong necessarily, but he wasn't exactly right. So
yeah, I guess at least it's my next question about that is, so is that you making those screams each time, or did y'all kind of rotate off as far as who was doing the kind of real low screams?
There was a lot of, like, throwing it around in Keziah, like, right off the top there in No Stars Over Bethlehem. There's, like, a scream that is, like, it's a sentence, but it's Arif, myself, and Luke, and every word is a different person.
Okay.
It just, like, bounces around, and we did it just, like, standing around a microphone. I think it's This Should Never Be. Mm-hmm. That shot, that carpet, right? And it's, like, we would throw it back and forth all the time, and everybody would do all sorts of different things. On Fortress, there are only two voices on the whole thing, I think. That's myself, and that's the producer, Juice.
Okay.
Right. Like, I want to say Arif might have done a little bit of the screaming, but I don't think so. He's got a really distinctive scream. You can hear it a lot on Keziah. He sounds a lot like Todd from Propagandhi. He's got, like, it's guttural, but it's not that, like, yeah, kind of stuff. It's just, like, more of, like, a low, raspy yell. I love his scream, and I wish we kept up using it, but, you know, things change. The way we wrote albums changed, so it just didn't get used as much.
Well, speaking of, before I let you get out of here, what's next for Protest the Hero? What do you guys got going on?
Well, we're supposed to be touring in June. I think we will be, assuming that mandates are all lifted and venues are all at full capacity. But that's specifically a Canadian tour. That's like barely even leaving our province. And then we're writing some stuff right now, because I mean, like, what the fuck ever, like, if we can't tour, we might as well continue to put out music.
Yeah, I feel that. That's most people I talk to, it's kind of what they're doing, like, especially when the pandemic was, I say not when it was going on, still going on, but when it was like full swing, everything's locked down, it's like, so what do you guys have going on? It's like, just writing the notes, there's, you know, just putting out music and just trying to keep up with it, you know. But
I know bands that were like closing up shop, being like, we're fucking done, we can't afford to continue because of the pandemic, going, I don't know, just like, don't fucking do anything, just sit down and write a fucking record. Like, I don't know, like, there's a band in Quebec that like actually just like, we can't fucking afford it, we gotta like get rid of our gear and get rid of our van and get rid of our jam space. Like, oh, fuck it. Get rid of that stuff, write a record. You don't need that shit right now. Like, it's in like, Canada, like, whatever, we've been fucking locked down, man. You're not going anywhere. Just right. Yeah.
I will say, I guess it's a little different now in America, because we're kind of just like, fuck it, it's over. We won, guess. Open that shit up.
I watch a lot of hockey, and it's like, whenever they're in the States, it's like, well, fuck, pandemic's over.
Yeah, right.
But then you bring it back up here, and there's nobody in the fucking ring.
I know, I was supposed to go see The Fall of Troy back in May, I believe. And me and a couple buddies of mine were like, yeah, I got the VIP thing. I was going to get to meet him. I've seen him a couple times before, and I always fucking love him. So I'm like, oh, yeah. Got to go back. And it was like, I mean, like a week before, like, Delta started surging. And I was like, man, I was kind of like, I'd probably be okay. I'm vaccinated and everything else. I think my whole family's vaccinated. I was like, I think we might be okay. And me and my wife talked about it. She's like, I don't feel good about it. I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll just chalk it up. Well, no big deal. And the week after the Houston show, their drummer posted, which I would have met him and interacting and everything. He's like, yep, test positive for COVID. It's like, fuck me. It's like,
ooh. Yeah. Was that Andrew?
Yeah.
Still playing with them? Yeah.
Yeah. He is. I guess he got back with them some years ago. But yeah, he posted about being positive. I was like, well, goddamn. I'm really glad I didn't go now, because there's no telling who else would have been around them, even in the crowd. And it's like, as much as I want to get back to live music, it's been over 2 years now. You know, I'd love to go back to a concert, but it's like, I just don't feel comfortable doing it. But
same for me, right? It's like, I don't know, it's like, this has been traumatizing to fucking everyone, right? And like, being in a crowd again is gonna be fucking weird. And I know maybe it's not the same in the States, because a lot of the states have kind of been like, well, whatever, we're just going back to life. And it's like, I don't know if that's the right thing. I don't know if it's the wrong thing. I just know that I'm certainly not ready, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. I can only do what I can do to, like, our family can kind of protect ourselves. And people, especially in the South, unfortunately, are going to do whatever the fuck they want. And so it's just like, all right, we'll kind of figure our ways around everything you're doing and try not to die. So,
Just
forgive us, but
like, they always say, like, in these moments, the people come together. I think this pandemic has proved that that is incorrect. People have been so fucking selfish. It is unbelievable. Like, everyone, like, ripping masks off each other. Like, why can't someone wear a fucking mask? Okay, you believe something different. Just fucking mind your own business. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I guess with that, man, I'll let you go. I really appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming on my little show here and talking to me for a little bit. And yeah, that's all I got, man. So
it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much, Jeremy, for having me and chewing the fat.
Yeah. All right, man. Take it easy.
All right. Peace.
All right. So that was the interview again with Brody Walker from Protest the Hero. Had a lot of fun. Learned a lot about this record, like random things that I guess I wouldn't have ever known about had I not been able to talk to him. So it's always really cool when I get a chance to do that with people. Hope you all enjoyed it as well. And so with this being my 100th episode, kind of a milestone, and with everything kind of going on, I haven't released an episode in like a month because I've just been behind and just really doing other things and trying to just, you know, get everything else kind of in order. I will be taking a slight break, a hiatus, if you will, for a little while. I kind of get everything back in order the way that I want. Maybe kind of retool the show, do more interviews, that sort of thing, where it's like, you know, I like doing the show. I like researching. And I like talking about the records that I love. But at the same time, it's just so much more fun. And I think so much more engaging for the listeners to have it, you know, when I have somebody else on to talk to, where it's not, where it's not just me, like I've said before, just yelling into the void alone. It's a lot more compelling and a lot more engaging when it's me going back and forth with somebody asking questions and that sort of thing. So, you know, I'm hoping to maybe get more regular interviews in the future. And if that causes me to have to drop the frequency of releases down from weekly to every other week or monthly even, but still have a regular rotation of guests and that sort of thing, then, you know, we'll see where that takes me. But for the time being, I will stop and, like I said, get all my affairs in order with that. And definitely have not seen, or not seen, but not heard the last of the Vinyl Countdown, but just for a little while, I'm going to be taking a break. So I do appreciate everybody who stuck around for these 100 episodes. The last 2.5 years have been really fun. The show has really afforded me the opportunity to do these types of interviews that I would have never even thought were possible back when I started. I kind of just decided to start a podcast one day, and it's like, you know, whatever. I'll just, hopefully one day I'll be able to maybe talk to the people whose music I'm talking about that I really love and maybe get their perspective on things and all of that. And, you know, honestly, I've kind of, you know, achieved that goal numerous times with all the people I've had on. And it's just been, it's been a wonderful experience. And I have really enjoyed it. So that said, you know, find me on Twitter, Vinyl Podcast 5, Facebook. If you're still on Facebook, if you're 70, sure. Find me on Facebook, just the Vinyl Countdown Podcast. If you are on Instagram, which most of you probably are, it is also the Vinyl Countdown Podcast there as well. I'm trying to think where else. TikTok, maybe. I don't know. Fuck. I don't even do anything on there. I just have one. But TikTok, I think it's Vinyl Countdown Podcast as well on there. Don't remember. Something like that. You'll see it. Yes, the Vinyl Countdown Podcast. So find me there too, I guess. I don't know. Just wherever, basically, it's basically everywhere where there's social media shit, it's the Vinyl Countdown or the Vinyl Countdown Podcast or Vinyl Podcast, some variation of that. So if you want to find me on those places, you can. You can send me a friend request. You know, you can request episodes. Maybe we can talk about music there and just have fun. Who knows? All that being said, I have rambled enough. So for this week, as always, I am Jeremy Levine, and this, of course, has been the Vinyl Countdown. And, yeah, I won't be in your ears next week, I guess, but hope to be in your ears soon after all this is done. So thank you all. Okay, bye.